Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Pei Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Pei Zayin, today's shiur will commence from the beginning of the Gemara section that follows the Mishnah that concluded at the upper part of the page. Before learning the Gemara itself, though, let us turn to the outside margin where we provide a nosei, which is a topic heading, in our Shas Ozir, which is the cornerstone of the Gemara marking system. We attempt to provide topic headings and, at times, structural notes that introduce the various geometric forms as they appear. In this case, under our nosei topic heading, we've written Yayin Mosoik, sweet wine. Beis Sugim, there are two types of sweet wine. The Mishnah spoke about them, and one is Machmas Hapri, where the sweetness is a result of the nature of the fruit, the grapes themselves. And a second situation is Machmas HaShemesh, in other words, the extensive sunshine on the grapes caused them to increase in sweetness. There's a term that we've seen, halistone, which is appropriate with regard to that. So turning to the Gemara opens with a quote. You can see we have it in a frame, as it's a quote from the Mishnah. Ein mevi'in loy mosoik v'loy mevushal v'lo me'ushan v'im hevi posul. We've dashed underlined the main point of this quote. It says here that one should not bring wine for Nesachim, for the wine offering that accompanies sacrifices, the wine that's called Mosok, sweet. And if one does bring it, it says in the Mishnah, Posel. The Gemara asks, but V'ho Kotoni Resha, but the earlier part of the Mishnah said, Ein Mevi'in Es Haliston, Halistion, V'im Hevi Kosher. Halistion is also a form of sweet wine. So here you notice we've dashed underline Kosher. And the previous quote, we dashed on the line, puzzle. So it seems to be a contradiction. Amar Ravina, kroch utni. Ravina's approach is to really combine, kroch utni means combine and teach and state it together as one. And what should the result be? So if we look in Rashi at the upper part of the page, kroch utni, as follows. Ein mevi'in halistion. The Mishnah is really teaching one point, not to use halistion wine, because it falls under the category of mosok, the imhevi puzzle. And if one does bring it, so it's unfit. That's the first approach. You'll notice we've indicated Ravina with a number one. A number two follows here with Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, Omar. Rav Ashi says you don't have to fuse together the two sections of the Mishnah, but rather there are two types of mosok. And Rav Ashi, we've broken down into aleph and beis. He says chulya deshimsha. Chulya means sweetness. Deshimsha, as a result of the sun, that's the halistion. Lo mois. That's not disgusting. That's acceptable. It's pleasant. Chulya depira, something whose sweetness is a function of the fruit itself, the grapes themselves, that's mois. That's considered mous, loosely translated as disgusting, but for our purposes, mous results in it becoming posul, and hence unacceptable. Ein mevi'in yoshon, divrei Rebbe, v'chachomim machshirin. Rebbe in the Mishnah says not to bring aged wine, yoshon, old wine, and the chachomim say it's okay. The Gemara, as we scan ahead, you'll notice there are two diamonds that appear. The explanation for this piece of Gemara is given on the outside margin under the Nosei Mivneh heading. This is a situation very common in our marking system where we combine the topic and the structural note into one note. and you see a diamond is featured. This is, these are shnei ta'omim, two reasons, l'shitas Rebbe, de'ein mevi'in yayin yoshan. And we'll discover that yayin yoshan is me'al shana, more than 1 year. So turning to the Gemara, Omar Chizkiya, my time out of Rebbe. Why does Rebbe hold that one should not bring Yashan? Omar Krav, the Pasuk says, La Keves Yayin. Ma Keves Ben Shana. So just like a Keves is a sheep, and it's a reference to a sheep that's 1 year old, not more. Af Yayin Ben Shnoso. So to wine is to be within its first year. Question. E ma keves. Before we actually read the Gemara further, just note that we have a long question marking accompanying this piece of Gemara. That's indicated by the little kuf that's encircled to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, and it with a vertical descending dashed line indicating the length of the question. So the Gemara asks, E ma keves ben shtei shanim posel, af yayin ben shtei shanim posel. If, like in the case of a sheep, when the Torah requires a sheep to be brought, and it uses the word keves, this is to the exclusion of a creature more than 1 year, meaning into its second year. And if one were to bring a ben shtei shanim, it would be unacceptable. Are then we to continue the wine parallel all the way and say that if the wine is more than 1 year, it's unacceptable? V'chitema hochinami, and if you insist on saying, yes, that in fact is the case, the Hotanya, but we have a source that says to the contrary. Yayin ben shtei shanim lo yavi. The author of this source, whose name doesn't appear immediately, says, don't bring two-year-old wine, the imhevi kosher. And if one does bring it, it's acceptable. Man shamis le domar lo yavi. Who is it that we know to object to the bringing of two-year-old wine? Rebbe. So this unnamed source, in fact, is Rebbe, because he is the one associated with an objection to bringing ben shtei shanim. V'ka'omar, and it says in this source, im hevi kosher, that if one does bring it, it's acceptable. So that, what happened then to the parallel to the sheep? We said by the sheep, if it is above a year, it's unacceptable. Therefore, it would have followed that the wine, if it's derived from the sheep, should also be unacceptable above a year. And yet we see that's not the case. So maybe we have to question our whole paralleling the wine to the sheep. Elo Omar Rava. Here we start the second approach. Hainu Taimo de Rebbe Dichtiv. The reason for Rebbe is as follows. Al Tere Yayin Ki Yis Adom. Wine is associated with yisadom. Yisadom from the word adom, redness. And the primary or intense redness color of wine is within its first year. As wine ages, its redness quality diminishes, and therefore we know that it's not then going to be defined as true wine because of this change in color. And once again, to repeat the point, within its first year, that is the time that it has its intense red color to it. Therefore, the wine has to be one within 1 year. Ein mevin lo min hadolios, and it went on in the Mishnah to say elo min ha avudim, tilled or cultivated vines. Tona kromim ho avudim pa'amayim b'shana. The Braisa elaborates on the Mishnah and says that when the Mishnah says that you should bring grapes from avudim, as we said, tilled vines, these are vineyards that have been tilled twice a year. Rav Yosef Havilei Karna de Pardesa. Rav Yosef had a section of a vineyard under his ownership. The Rofik Beit Fei Rivka, he tilled it twice a year. The Avad Hamra, and it produced a very strong, high quality wine. The Dori Maya Alchad Train, that was able to be diluted with twice the amount of water as standard wine. Let's just a word of background here, and that is that in the time of the Gemara, the wine that was produced, the raw wine, the basic wine, was very, very strong, and it needed to be diluted in order to make it more pleasant to drink. The standard rate of dilution that you find in the Gemara, you find sometimes two parts wine and sometimes three parts, once again, two parts water, one part wine, and sometimes you see three parts water to one part wine. So that's called a 3-to-1 ratio. In this case, Rav Yosef's grapes were of such high quality that they were able to sustain twice the amount of water, which would come out to 6 parts water for every 1 part wine. And that's seems to be a result of his extra tilling and aerating the vines. Continuing in the Gemara, Lo hoyu koinsim oison b'chatzovim gedoilim. The Mishnah says that the wine used for the nesachim should not be stored in large barrels. Tana. This is a brisa that alludes to a certain type of barrel that was known at the time of the Gemara, and it says chovios, kadoyos, ludios, ubeinonios. These are a type of a description of a certain size container. These were barrels that were the same size as the jugs, the middle size, the medium size jugs of Lud. Lud was the name of a place, and in Lud they produced a certain type of standard size jug that was known. So the source here is telling us that barrels that are of the same size as the medium size jugs produced in Lud, ein manichen oison shtayim, they should not be stored one on top of the other, elo achas achas, rather separately, without one upon the other. Ketzad bodek, the Mishnah discussed the checking of the wine as while it's drawn from the barrel. At what point should the drawing of the wine stop? Because from that point on, it would not be suitable for nesachim. So the Mishnah said, "Ketzad bodek." How is the checking done? Gizbar Yoshe v'kona biyado. The Mishnah said that the overseer, the gizbar, the one in charge, sat with a staff or rod in his hand. Zorak hagir hikish b'kona. When the gear started to flow forth from the wine, from the barrel, he then tapped with a staff, indicating that's it, no more drawing of the wine. Tana, a brief Tanaic source that elaborates on this gear substance, Zorak Hagir Shel Shmorim. This was some type of froth or substance that is in the wine it lay upon the lees at the bottom of the barrel. So when the wine was flowing from the barrel, as they were drawing the wine, when this gear substance started to appear, it was understood, stop drawing, because if you continue drawing any further, you're going to then get grape lees mixed in as well, and that's unfit, that's unacceptable for nesachim. Gizbar hikish bekona. The Mishnah mentioned that the gizbar, he tapped with the rod, and that tapping was an indication to stop the drawing of the wine from the barrel. So the Gemara asks, as far as this tapping is concerned, v'leimo leimema, why doesn't the gizbar say in speech, stop the wine, speak? Why the tapping? So the Gemara explains the reason for the tapping, or the Mishnah that says no speech. Once again, the Mishnah that says no speech in the context of the wine, in the environs of the wine, Mesayale the Rabbi Yochanan. This supports Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Kishem Shadibur Yofele Besamim, just like speech produces a higher quality incense. The besamim used in the Beis HaMikdash, we refer to that as the Ktoris, and the production of the Ktoris. Speech apparently improved the production of that. Kach, on the same scale, Dibor Ra Leayin, same scale or opposite scale, Dibor is unfit or is negative. It has an adverse effect on the quality of the wine. So when one is in the environment of barrels of wine, Rabbi Yochanan says silence is highly desired. Therefore, the gizbar, in the presence of the wine and the wine barrels, he merely tapped with a rod as opposed to speaking. Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and the Mishnah said that wine sheyesh boi kemochim posel. If the wine has kemochim in it, that's unacceptable. Boi Rabbi Yochanan. Let's say someone sanctified or dedicated, was makdish, dedicated or sanctified wine for the Beis HaMikdash that had in it kmochim. Is this person guilty of an offense that would warrant malchus, the offense being makdish e baal mum? So the two sides of this question are presented. Kivan de posel, since wine that has kmochim in it is unfit, ki baal mum doming, it's like an animal that carries a blemish with it. And such an animal, if one were to sanctify it as a sacrifice, he would be guilty of lashing. He would be guilty of the offense of being makdish baal mum. Oy dilma, or do we say, ein baal mum elo bebehema, that the offense of being makdish baal mum is limited to the sanctification of animals and not wine. So the question is raised, however, the answer is unavailable. Teku, it remains unresolved. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a brief source that describes places that were, let's say, best, or places that provided the most desirable of different products. Elim Mimoav, Elim are rams, from the country Moav, a neighboring country to Eretz Yisrael. Kvasim, Mechevron, sheep were best, those that came from the Chevron area of Israel. Agolim, Misharon, calves from the Sharon area. Gozlos, Mehar HaMelech, birds used for bird offerings were best, those that came from Har HaMelech. Rav Yehuda, Omer, Mevim, Kvasim, Shigovon, Kerochvon. Rav Yehuda says that they would bring sheep that their height and their width, width were equal, indicating or signifying very fat and desirable sheep. Omar Rava Barav Shilo, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the basis of Rabbi Yehuda in saying that one should seek out sheep like this? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Yireh miknecha b'yomahu kar nirchav. Kar is a reference to a sheep, nirchav, wide. The pasuk says, "Ksiv al chomosayich Yerushalayim hifkadeti shomrim kol hayom kol halayla tamid lo yechshu hamazgirim es Hashem al domi lochem." The pasuk describes on the walls of Yerushalayim, the Almighty has appointed shomrim, guards or angels, all day and all night, and they do not remain silent. That's lo yechshu. They mention the Almighty and are not to become silent. My Amri, so what do these angels or guards say? Hochi Omar Rava Barav Shilo. Thusly, Rava teaches, Ato Tokum Torachim Tzion. So these guards that are appointed, these heavenly guards appointed over the walls of Yerushalayim, are praying so that you, the Almighty, should arise and have mercy on Zion. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Omar, Boine Yerushalayim Hashem. An alternative pshat is to what they would say, the pasuk referring to the Kodesh Baruch Hu being the builder of Yerushalayim. These are psukim that indicate what they would say nowadays when the Beis HaMikdash is in ruins. Umeikora my havu amri, prior to the destruction of the holy temple, what did they say? Omar Rav Barav Shilo, they would say, Ki bochar Hashem b'tzion ivo l'moishav lo. The Kodesh Baruch, the Almighty, has chosen Zion, and He desires to dwell in it. At this point, we turn to the new perek, the 10th perek. And before we learn the Mishnah, let's just glance at the outside margin under our Nosei heading. Machloikis Chachomim v'Rabbi Meir. We will see a controversy between these two authorities, but mispar esroinois shahoyu b'mikdash. The es isaron in this context is the name of a vessel, the name deriving from the fact that an isaron is a measure. So in the Beis HaMikdash there were specific vessels that were measuring vessels. And we'll see a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim regarding the number of isaron vessels that were there. We will learn the names of the different measuring vessels and what they were used to measure. The Mishnah says, "Shtei midos shel yovesh hoyu b'mikdash." So there were two dry measures, as opposed to liquid measures, vessels for measuring liquids that will be discussed later. So this Mishnah tells us there were two dry measures, and they were called isaron and v'chatzi isaron. Rabbi Meir Omer, Isaron, Isaron, Vichatz Isaron. With the numbers, you can see, according to Rabbi Meir, he had three vessels, according to his opinion. Isaron, ma hoyo mishamish, what was the purpose of the Isaron measure? Answer, shebo hoyo moideid l'chol ha-menachos. The amount of flour, the standard amount of flour for a mincha, a meal offering, was an Isaron. Lo hoya modeid, lo b'shlosha lepar, v'lo b'shel shnayim la'ayon, elo modedon esronos. There were sacrifices that required more than one isaron of meal offering, and that includes the meal offering that accompanies a cow sacrifice and the meal offering that accompanies a ram sacrifice. So the Mishnah tells us that the cow sacrifice demanded three isaron. However, you did not have a vessel that contained three isaron. And the ayal, the ram, demanded two isaron. And for that, there was no vessel that contained two isaron, but rather, they took the vessel that had one isaron and would measure three measurings of flour for the par and two measurings for the ayal. Chatz isaron mahu yamashamesh. What about the half isaron vessel? What was its role? Answer: Shebohaya moideid chavite koyen gadol. It was used in the measuring in anticipation of the kohen gadol's daily meal offering, known as this, the chavite kohen gadol, mechza baboker mechza bein harbayim. A full isaron was required for the chavite kohen gadol. However, it was offered half in the morning and half in the afternoon. So the chatz isaron vessel was used in the preparation or the measuring for the offering of this meal offering of the kohen gadol. Tanya. We have a Tanaic source on this topic of the vessels and the measurings. Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, ma Talmud Lomar Isaron, Isaron Lekeves Ho'echad. This is a quote from the Pasuk found in Bamidbor, Perek Chof Ches, Pasuk Chof Aleph. There is a double expression in this Pasuk. It says, Isaron, Isaron Lekeves Ho'echad. Melame, this teaches us, Sheshtei Isaronos Hoya B'Mikdash. This is Rabbi Meir's source for what we saw already in the Mishnah, that there were two Isaron vessels. Echod Godush ve'echod Mochuk. One was a heaping Isaron, and the other was a leveled Isaron. A little illustration that we have to accompany this, you'll notice there are two vessels that we've, in the margin of the Gemara, we've drawn. You're looking at it from the side. The vessel entitled Mochuk and the vessel entitled Godush, when filled, contain the same amount of flour. The Mochuk vessel is simply leveled. The Godush vessel itself is smaller in size, but when it's heaped with flour, the amount contained in the vessel and the dome, so to speak, the heaping, will be the same as in the other vessel that is described as mochuk, leveled. The Mishnah goes on to, this Tanaic source goes on to explain, Godush shebo hoya modeid l'chol hamanochos. The Godush vessel was used for the measuring of standard meal offerings. Mochuk sheboi hoya moideid l'chavite koyen gadol. The mochuk one was used for the measuring of the daily meal offering of the kohen gadol. We should take a look at the Rashi found at the top of Omid Beis. Mochuk shebo hoya modeid chavite kohen gadol. Lefi sheyesh loy lechalik b'shnei chatzoi isaron. The chavite kohen gadol, as we mentioned earlier, was a meal offering, but only half was brought in the morning and half was brought in the afternoon. The total quantity of flour that was needed was a full isaron. However, that full isaron was split, was divided, half for the morning offering and half for the afternoon offering. So Rashi says, once again, since you have to divide this into two half isarons, if the initial measuring of the isaron was done into a heaping isaron, when you would have to carry the vessel around with the flour in a heaping fashion, you would lose some of it would scatter, the part of the flour that's heaping would scatter on the ground. So that since the chavite kohen gadol was a type of offering that there was an initial measuring and then a subsequent dividing of that measure, the initial measuring was done into a vessel that contained an isaron when level. So that would enable them to then carry that vessel containing the isaron without having to worry about a loss of flour through the fact that it would otherwise have been heaped. The source continues, "V'chachamim oimrim lo hoyasham elo isaron echad." As far as the Chachamim are concerned, in the Beis Hamikdash there was only one Isaron vessel. Shenemar v'Isaron echad l'keveso echad. The pasuk says one Isaron. Im kein matam lomar Isaron Isaron. So what do the Chachamim do with the double expression that we saw in the previous pasuk quoted? Answer: the rabbis chatzi Isaron. The double expression comes to include not only one Isaron, but there would be also a chatzi Isaron vessel as well. Rabbi Meir Chatzi Isaron Menole, Rabbi Meir, who saw from the double expression Isaron Isaron a reference to two Isaron vessels, where does Rabbi Yochanan know about the presence of a Chatzi Isaron measuring vessel? Answer: Nafkole mi v Isaron, the Vav, and the Vav is coming from the pasuk quoted just two lines above, where it said V'Isaron Echad. So he sees from the Vav a hint to an additional vessel, namely the Chatzi Isaron. V'Rabbonan, the Rabbonan who needed the double expression to teach the Chatzi Isaron vessel, what do they say with regard to the Vav? The Gemara says, Vav lo darshi. The Rabbonan don't see any point, any new halacha to be derived from the Vav. Rabbi Meir holds there were two Isronos. Hi, Visaron echod lekeveso echod by Ovidlei. What does Rabbi Meir do with the pasuk that the Rabbonan cited, the pasuk indicating that there was one Isaron? Answer: Hahu shelo yimdoid. This pasuk tells me that there should be no measuring lo b'shel shloisha lepar v'lo b'shel shnayim la'ayel. We saw this halacha before, and the source for it is right over here, that the par, cow offering, or ram offering, that demanded more than a single isaron in the accompanying meal offering, respectively, the pasuk is telling us that you are not to produce, there was not to be a three isaron measuring device for cow offerings, nor a two isaron measuring device for the ayo, for the ram offerings, but rather only one isaron was used, and in the case of the par, there would be three measurings, three times one, to produce the three isaron necessary for the par. The Rabbonon, who used that pasuk of isaron echad for their stance, their position, that there was only one isaron and not two, unlike Rabbi Meir. Where do they learn this point from, that there was not to be extra measuring vessels, a three isaron, nor a two isaron measuring vessel? Rabbonon, nafkaluhu mi nikudo. They learn it from a dot. This is a dot that appears in the Torah above the word. It's a dot that's there based on an oral tradition. Certain places in the Torah, dots appear above certain letters and certain words, and that's based on a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai in how to write a Sefer Torah. And the Rabbonin saw significance in these dots. The dot, when present, tells you reduce. It comes lema'it, so that the idea of limit or lema'it, reduction, we're applying over here to numbers of vessels. We don't have a three and a two measuring device, three isaron, two isaron for these animal offerings. Desanya, here the Tanaic source elaborates on this point regarding the traditional dot that appears. Omar Rabbi Yossi, Loma Nokud Vav Sheba'emza Isaron. Why is the Vav in the middle of the word Isaron with a dot above it? So the Let's read this again. Lama nokud vav shebeemsa isaron shel isaron rishon shel yom tov rishon shel chag. In the Torah, the Torah, you find lists of sacrifices for different holidays, and in the context of the chag is sukkis, the sukkis korbanos. We find on the first day of sukkis, the word Isaron appears in the description of sacrifices that one needs to bring on the first day of Sukkot. And lo and behold, above the word Isaron in the sacrifice associated with the first day of Sukkot, there is a dot. Why is the dot there? Answer: Shelo yimdoid lo b'shel gimel lepar v'lo b'shel shnayim la'ayol, telling us that there shall not be a 3 Isaron measure for the cow offering, nor a 2 Isaron measure for the ayal offering. And when we speak about cow and ayal offering, we're referring to the meal offerings that accompanied these animal sacrifices. The Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, who learned the idea of limited vessels, not from the dot, but he learned it from the Isaron Echad. What does he do with the dot? Nikudo lo dorish. He doesn't darshan, he doesn't see a chidush halacha from the presence of this dot. Hence, he relies on the pasuk to teach the limitation of numbers of Isaron vessels, namely not a 3 and not a 2 for these animal offerings. Chatzi Isaron ma hoyo mishamish. So the Mishnah tells us, shebo hoyo moideid l'chavite koyein gadol. It was used for modeid. Modeid means the measuring of the chavite koyein gadol. To this, the Gemara asks a kasha. It says, modeid. Read that with an intonation of wonderment, with a bitmiha. Modeid, do you really mean that the Chatzi Isaron vessels was used in the measuring of the Chavite Kohen Gadol, which was the daily meal offering that the Kohen Gadol would bring for Ramini? But we have the following contradictory Tanaic source. Chavite Kohen Gadol lo hoyu boyin chatzoin. The Chavite Kohen Gadol was not brought in halves. Half an Isaron and a second half Isaron. Elo maybe Isaron Sholem v'chotzehu. It was brought as a complete, a full Isaron, so that when you talk about the measuring of the Kohen, Chavite Kohen Gadol, you can talk about a measuring into an Isaron vessel, but not using the Chatzi Isaron for the measuring of the Kohen Gadol's Chavitin. Omar Rav Sheshes, who Rav Sheshes explains, my modeid nami dekotoni, the Mishnah that says that they use the Chatzi Isaron for that of the Kohen Gadol, it doesn't mean measuring, it's mechalek. It was there to split the Isaron, namely the Chavite Kohen Gadol flour content quantity was measured in an Isaron vessel. It was then, that Isaron vessel was then divided into 2 Chatzi Isaron vessels. But the Chatzi Isaron vessel's purpose was simply to hold the divided Isaron. It was not there to measure a Chatzi Isaron per se. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a series marking, one of our common geometric forms, the triangle, which it also in this particular Gemara is followed by a double underline emphasizing the names. So we have a series of questions, and this you can see on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading. The triangle is featured. Sidro shel she'elos shel Romi Bar Chama Merav Chisda. A series of questions, and each time you'll see it's Romi Bar Chama addressing his question to Rav Chisda. The names have been double underlined. Before learning the first question, we have a topic heading. The topic here deals with describing Midos Chatzi Isaron Rabbi Meir, the Chatzi Isaron vessel according to Rabbi Meir, the Isaron L'Rabbonan, and the Isaron vessel according to the Rabbonan, Haim Hoyo Machzik Midoseim Rak Im Hagoydesh Oy Mochuk. Do they contain the respective quantity when heaping or when level? And we described this, we illustrated this at the bottom of Omed Aleph. Turning now to the Gemara. Boi mine Romi Bar Chama Merav Chisda. Chatzi Isaron le Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir's Chatzi Isaron vessel. Godush hoya oy mochuk hoya? Was it godush? Was it a chatzi saron when heaping, or was it a chatzi saron when level? So this is Rami Bar Chama's question to Rav Chisda. Here, the Gemara turns around and says, "V'tiboy loch l'rabbanan." Why not ask your question with regard to the opinion of the Rabbanan? So the Gemara, in other words, you could have asked, "Well, the Rabbanan also account for a chatzi saron vessel. So why are you focusing your question on Rebbe Meir?" The Gemara explains why the question is not raised with regard to the Rabbanan, because the Rabbanan isaron gufei kot mibaya. With regard to the position of the Rabbanan, we don't even know their position on the basic isaron measuring vessel. Godush hoya oy mochuk hoya. Was it godush, was it heaping or level? Omar le, so the answer is now forthcoming. He answers. There's an introduction here to before the answer in two parts. Aleph, Mida Rebbe Meir, Nishma Rebbe Meir. And Beis, Mida Rebbe Meir, Nishma Rabbanan. This will be explained by the Gemara. Namely, that from one point of Rebbe Meir, we'll derive the other point of Rebbe Meir, and from Rebbe Meir, we can then derive the Rabbanan. And the Gemara will now explain that. Mida Omar Rebbe Meir, Isaron Mahuk. From the fact that Rebbe Meir made a reference to the Isaron that was leveled, that was used for the Chavitin. Therefore, Chatzi Isaron Nami Mochuk. The half Isaron that was used for the Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol was also level. In other words, vessels used for Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol were level. Mida Rebbe Meir Mochuk. From the fact that Rebbe Meir's vessels were Mochuk, the vessels that we just spoke about, those used for the Chavite Kohen Gadol. So, the Rabbonon Nami Mochuk, the Rabbonon who had a singular Isaron, it too was Mochuk, because it too was used for the measuring of the Chavite Kohen Gadol. And as we mentioned before, you could not afford to have a Chavite Kohen Gadol Isaron that was heaping, because you would need to split the Isaron into the two half Isarons, and when pouring out from a heaping vessel, you're going to lose, or when moving around a heaping vessel in anticipation of divining it, you're going to lose some of the quantity. Therefore, the Rabbanon's Isaron also had to be level. Another question. Bo mine Rami Bar Chama Merav Chisda. Chavite Kohen Gadol b'ma mechalkon l'chalois. The Chavite Kohen Gadol were offered, as we said, half in the morning and half in the afternoon. The Chavite Kohen Gadol were fashioned into loaves. There was dough that was then baked into loaves. The dough, how was it divided into loaves? In other words, you had the Chavite Kohen Gadol had a number of loaves. Half the number offered in the morning and half in the afternoon. But now, when we're talking about dividing the Esau into individual loaves, that's the focus of our question. Now, how was it divided? Biyad or bekli? Was it hand divided into separate loaves, or was a measuring device, a scale used? We should point out that the Chavite Kohen Gadol was made of 12 loaves, 6 offered in the morning and 6 offered in the afternoon. So our question right now is the division of the dough into loaves. Were they divided by hand or with using a scale? Answer: Pshita debiyad. It's obvious that they divided the dough by hand. The ibekli, if you were to use a vessel, the vessel in question here would be a scale. So, reading this with wonderment, Tortini Yachnis, do you think they would bring a scale into the Beis HaMikdash? So to this, the Gemara says, well, why not? The Yachnis, so bring in a scale. So the Gemara says, no. Kevan debeklolik siv lav orach ara. Since a reference to scales, which indicates a very limited amount where everything was measured out, is written in the Torah in the context of the curses. There's a pasuk that says, "Veheshivu lachmechem b'mishkol," mishkol being a scale, a measured amount. So since that pasuk appears in the context of the curses, and the word mishkal, which is the scale, is mentioned. Therefore, you wouldn't bring into the Beis HaMikdash something, a device that's associated with a curse. The expression lav orach ara means it's not derech eretz, it's not proper. Bo minei Rami bar Chama merav Chista. A new question. This question is focused on the Shulchan, which held the Lechem Aponim, the 12 loaves that sat from Shabbos to Shabbos in the Heichal. We want to know about the sanctification capacity of the Shulchan. In general, clay shoreis, service vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, had the following strength to them, and that is that items placed in them would become sanctified. They would gain Kedushas Haguf with all kinds of legal ramifications. Here the Gemara asks, what about the Shulchan power to sanctify? Shulchan mal shikadesh kmotzim begoydesh shaloi. Since we mentioned Godesh before, the heaping phenomenon of other vessels, here we want to know about the surface of the table. Anything placed on the surface, being that the table, the Shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash, did not have an interior. It was essentially basically a flat-topped unit, without getting into details concerning the little crown, the zer that was around it, but it was basically a flat-topped vessel that the stacks of the Lechem Aponim were piled upon it. Here, the focus is not on the Lechem Aponim, the focus is on the Kmotzim. The Kmotzim, more specifically, is a reference to the Lavona. Generally speaking, the Lavona, which was a type of spice, was kept on the table inside other vessels known as bozichin. Containers called bozichin contained the Lavona, which sat on the Shulchan together with the breads from week to week, and every Shabbos this Lavona was offered on the Mizbeach. What about the placing of the Lavona, the Kmotzim, because the amount of the Lavona was a handful of Lavona, in this case not in the bozichin, the standard vessel that contained it, but what about placing the Lavona on the table, the Shulchan, and thereby achieving sanctity by having been placed on the Shulchan? So that's this question about the Kiddush, the sanctification power of the table, the Godesh Shalom, Godesh meaning it's above its surface. So the question is presented here in two parts of Aleph, Oy Dilma, Beis. Midimekadesh Lechem, just like the table sanctifies the breads, the Lechem upon him, which is stacked upon it, Kimotzim Nami Mekadesh. It also is capable of sanctifying the Lavona, the handfuls of Lavona. Oy Dilma, or do you say, Dechazi Le Mekadesh, that which is designed for it, fit for it, the Lechem, the breads were to be stored, kept on the table. That's Dechazi Le, that which is fit for it, for the Shulchan, the Shulchan is Mekadesh. The Lo Chazi Le, the Kmotzim, on the other hand, which were not designed to be placed on the table directly, but rather in the Bozichin. So something that it's not Roi for it, the Kmotzim, which are not Roi, not fit for the Shulchan, lo mekadesh, the table will not sanctify. Amale, Rav Chista responds, eino mekadesh, the table does not sanctify. This causes a question. This brings upon us a question, and the question itself lasts a few lines. The long question marking is noted to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text. The Gemara asks, eini, is that so that the Shulchan is not mekadesh? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Before reading further in the Gemara, we have to give a word of introduction. The table, as we mentioned, held two stacks, six and six, of the Lechem Aponim. The Lechem Aponim was a uniquely shaped loaf. It was a loaf that had sides to it. In other words, it was, and there's a machlokus exactly how it looked, but without getting into the details of what the shape was, we should simply mention that it had the loaf had sides to it that had a height to them. If you were to imagine, just using as an example, one of the shitas, if you were to imagine
a box, a carton, with two of its sides cut away. So you would have a unit that would look like a, let's say, a squared letter U. Two sides and a bottom. The sides had a certain height to them, a certain dimension. And with regard to this, there are two shitos that Rabbi Yochanan presents. Two authorities, two different opinions at what the height of the sides of these unusually shaped loaves that constituted lechem upon him. One says that the sides were 2.5 tfochim in height, and one opinion says they were 2 tfochim in height. In other words, they prepared basically a flat type of dough and then folded up the sides, measuring these two different possibilities. Now we employ the wisdom of advanced mathematics, and we simply multiply six times whatever the height of the sides were. So 6 times 2.5, that would give you 15. If the sides were 2 tefachim in height, it would be 6 times 2, coming up with the grand total of 12 tefachim of height. So Rabbi Yochanan says as follows. According to the opinion that the shulchan, that the breads, the lechem upon him that sat on the shulchan, had sides that measured 2.5 tefachim. Kofel means literally folded, and as we mentioned before, a flat piece of dough was prepared, and then the sides were folded upwards. That's kofel. So according to the opinion that the height of the folded up sides was 2.5 tefachim. Nimtza shulchan mekadesh 15 tefach lamalo. And here the key word is mekadesh. It's sanctified, and we've dashed underlined the word mekadesh and the word lamalo, because this indicates that there was sanctification taking place above the surface of the table. L'divrei omer tefachim kofel, according to the opinion that says that the heights of the sides of the breads were 2 tefach, then says shulchan mekadesh yud beis tefach, 12 tefach lemalo. So you see from this statement that the table does have a sanctification capacity. Amalei, so he answers, eino mekadesh likrav, avo mekadesh lifsol. It doesn't sanctify in its height to the extent that as a result of the sanctification we're now going to offer something. However, there is a level of sanctification that is gained by placing things on the surface of the table, even piled up to a certain height, that would then render the item sensitive to becoming nifsal, to becoming puzzle, let us say, if a tvul yom comes into contact with that item. In general, a tevul yom, he is a person that had been ritually impure, been tamei, and needs to wait for the sundown, in order to achieve his tara. Before sundown, he immerses himself in a mikveh. He's toivel, and it's still daytime before the time between his going into mikveh and his and the sundown, or if necessary, the subsequent sacrifices that may be brought on the next day. But the time period before sundown, after having gone to mikveh, a person has a status, a quasi-tuma status, and he's called a tvul yom. A tvul yom, if he comes into contact with, if he touches things that have become sanctified, so his contact will render them unfit. So the table does have this power, that it will sanctify something to the extent that it will become sensitive to becoming nifsal through these, through a tvul yom, let us say. However, to say that the bozichin, let us say, if you poured out the lavona onto the surface of the table, and then say, oh, the lavona now is resting on the surface, above the surface of the table, so it's within these, let's say, 15 or 12 tefachim that were just mentioned, and as a result of that, I can now offer it on the altar. To that we say no. The sanctification that the table affords to items placed on its top is not sufficient to allow it to now be offered.
as is obvious, one does not offer things on the Mizbeach unless they have achieved a sufficient level of sanctity. And that level of sanctity is not achieved by placing something on the surface of the Shulchan that sat in the Heichal. The Mishnah. This Mishnah deals with liquid measures. Sheva midos shelach hoyu b'mikdash. And the Mishnah now enumerates them. Before going on, we want to note that we have a numbering system that's used here, and the numbers will indicate the numbers are above the name of each different liquid measure. We're going to be using this numbering system again when we get to the Brisa that opens up the Gemara, and there we will see an interesting phenomenon with regard to two shittas that appear on this matter. In the meantime, the Mishnah says Sheva midos shelach hoyu b'mikdash, and they are hin v'chatzi hin u'shlishis hahin u'revias hahin a lug. The fifth name of the fifth type of vessel was a lug. Before we go further in the list, we should point out that a hin was a vessel that had that contained 12 lug. Therefore, the chatzi hin held 6 lug. A third of a hin held 4 lug. And a quarter of a hin, we're talking about a quarter of 12, would be 3 lug. There were other vessels. We mentioned the lug, the chatzi lug, uravias lug. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, Omer, shinsos hoyu bahin. According to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, at this point, it appears he didn't have multiple liquid vessels, but rather there was one vessel that contained a hin, and there were notches, shinsos, notches, indicators on the side of the vessel. Ad kan lepar, v'ad kan la'ayil, v'ad kan lekeves. The par, when a cow offering was brought, it would have a wine offering that accompanies it. The wine quantity was a chatzi hin. That means 6 lug. So that you had a vessel that would contain a full hin, which is 12 lug. And on the side, there was a notch at the halfway mark, at the point at which half a hin would be measured. And likewise on that same vessel, as is the case, by the way, we have in your standard kitchen measuring cup. You have a cup that contains, we'll say, a cup. And then there are notches or indications on the side of the vessel, little lines that appear on the side of the vessel indicating when you get to half a cup, a quarter of a cup, etc. Same thing here with regard to the hin as far as Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok was concerned. So that there was a notch that said up till this point was for the par. That would mean 6 lug, the 6 lug mark. And for the aisle would be the 4 lug mark. And for the kevis, the 3 lug mark. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo hoya sham hin. Rabbi Shimon says there was no hin vessel at all. V'chima hoya hin mishamesh. There was no purpose. There was no sacrifice that measured a hin, so that there's no point in having it. Elo mido yisera shel lug umechza hoisa sham. We have to account for 7 measures, so Reb Shimon seeming is also under the influence of needing to account for 7 measures. So instead of a hin, it was replaced by a lug and a half, a measure that contained 1.5 lugs. Shebo hoya moide leminchas kohen gadol. The minchas kohen gadol, we spoke about that at some extent earlier, the daily meal offering, the minchas chavitin of the kohen gadol. In addition to the flour, it had an oil content, and that was a total of 3 lug were needed for the Minchas Kohen Gadol, lug umechtso baboker, lug umechtso bein harbayim, 1.5 lug in the morning and 1.5 lug in the afternoon, and that would account for a 1.5 lug liquid measuring vessel. Tanu Rabbanan, we start a brisa, and you'll note, of course, that this brisa continues. You can see that the frame is open on the bottom. It continues till the upper part of Pei Ches Omed Aleph. Tanu Rabbanan. Sheva midos shalach hoyu b'mikdash. There were seven liquid measures. And the numbering appears again. But before we go on, let's just point out that the first opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, will list initially the small measure and work his way up, increase in size as the measure numbers from 1 till 7. Rabbi Meir appears right after Rabbi Yehuda, has the same vessels. However, he starts, like we saw in our Mishnah, from the largest vessel and then enumerates them in decreasing quantity. There is significance to this difference. One shouldn't think that there's simply a repetition of the seven vessels on the part of Rabbi Meir, but rather the fact that they're listed in a different order, you know, the same vessels but listed in a different order, has significance. That will be discussed later. So we turn to the beginning of this brisa and we say Tonu Rabbonon Sheva Midos Shalachoy B'Mikdash. Revius lug, chatzi lug, lug, revius sahin, shlisha sahin, chatzi hin, vihin, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Omer. And here, we've numbered them using the same numbers, but in a reversed order. So we're going to list them 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hin, v'chatzi hin, shlisha sahin, revius sahin, lug, v'chatzi lug, revius lug. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo hoya sham hin. Rabbi Shimon in his brisa, just like we saw in the Mishnah, he says there was no hin vessel at all. V'chi ma hoya hin mishamesh. What should it have served? In other words, there was no purpose. For what purpose was there any? Would you say there is for a hin? Esmi avi tachtov. So what should I bring in its stead to account for seven vessels? Elo mido yisera shalug umechza hoisosham. There was an extra vessel, an extra measuring vessel, holding a 1.5 lug. Shebohia moide lechavite kohen gadol. He used that for measuring the oil required for the chavite kohen gadol. Lug umechza baboker, lug umechza ben rabayim. 1.5 lug in the morning and 1.5 lug for the afternoon offering. Amru lo, the Rabbanan responded to Reb Shimon and said, Chatzi lug hoisosham. There was a, we accounted for a half lug vessel, v'efshir l'shayer b'chatzi lug. You could figure, if you need 1.5 lug, so you can measure it. You have a lug vessel and the half lug vessel. Amru lahem, well, Rabbi Shimon said back to them, Af l'divrechem, chatzi lug v'lug lo ye'aseh. You don't need to have those vessels, because revius hoisa sham. You have a vessel containing a revius of a lug, efshir l'shayer b'revius. You can, if you need, let us say, a lug, so you could make four measurings using the revius, and you'll get to your lug. Elo zeh haklal hoy b'mikdash. Rather, this is the rule: kli shemishamish mido zu eino mishamish mido acheres. A vessel that's used for measuring a specific amount, it's not used to measure out another amount. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.